Hello, Internet. My name is Jonathan Cook.
And I'm Matt Noble.
And this week on the Screen Verdict Podcast, we're going to be reviewing the film Battle of the Sexes.
We're going to go back and forward on it. I'll be the Billie Jean King to your Bobby Riggs, Jonathan.
Yes,
I was having it out over this movie.
I was thinking, who better to review a film, Battle of the Sexes, man versus woman, than two dudes? So it looks like you're representing the fairer sex. You're the Billie Jean King, and I am the Bobby Riggs of the podcast. You saucy minx.
So, unfortunately, Bonnie was meant to see this movie with us. We could have had a female perspective, but she was held up at work.
Yes, we went to see it together. A good friend, Tom O'Neill from Gold Derby, got us an advanced screening. What was it, like 24 hours in advance? Either way, it still felt rather special. And
it was really helpful for this podcast we're recording weeks after the release.
But yes, Bonnie wasn't able to make it, so we'll just guess at what her opinion might have been. Now, this is a historical film. This is based on a true story. It's set in the 70s. But we are going to talk about some spoilers, but we're still going to give you a spoiler warning because not everybody knows their 70s tennis history that well.
I'll be honest. Before I saw the trailer for this movie, didn't know about this match, and I was able to avoid finding out who won in the movie. Like, I going into it, I had a fairly good idea, like, oh, probably the hero wins, they may have not made a movie about it, but I actually didn't know, so I was quite excited to see how it played out, like, what the score would be, who would win, because I did go in unspoiled, so there might be a lot of other sort of millennial listeners tuning into the podcast who don't really know about this, although I did mention it to my mum, and she did hear it. Apparently, it was a big deal when it happened.
Yeah, I didn't actually know the result like you. I had an inkling. I had my suspicions, but, you know, I guess it isn't a foregone conclusion, because apparently there have been some matches like this, and I guess this is perhaps the most well-known. Billie Jean King is definitely one of the biggest names in tennis, but there have been matches that have gone either way. Sometimes the male wins, sometimes the female wins, and then, you know, this is arguably the biggest one that went down. So I was interested to see who won.
Yeah, I was too, and I thought, like, I had a suspicion that maybe Billie Jean King would win, but I sort of thought perhaps on the other hand, maybe, like, her losing does not necessarily mean there is an advancement made for women's rights and tennis and all these sorts of things. Like, I didn't know if the final act was going to be the game or what happened after the game and things like that. So, I was excited not to know. So you might also be excited to see this movie and not know. So we're going to give a spoiler warning.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. Okay.
Yeah. There's a lot of state. That is an interesting question. It's like, you know, imagine if the end of the film was just, if only Billie Jean King had won, we'd have equality. Thanks a lot, Billie Jean.
She should have had more of those vitamins. Why wasn't she having any vitamins?
People see Billie Jean in the street and they're just throwing their 80 cents on the dollar at her.
Yeah. So, how are we going to talk about, like, this movie, Jonathan?
Well, one thing I wanted to briefly mention before we get into it is the directors of the film, because it's directed by two people.
Mm.
Coincidentally, a man and a woman. So if this were to win Best Director at the Oscars, that's going to be quite a decision. Like, the Academy's like, oh, look, Jonathan Dayton, you did a great job, but there's just no way we can't give the Oscar to Valerie for this movie. I'm sorry. I'm afraid.
Well, at the Oscars, if you're a pair of directors, you both share the nomination and the win.
I did know that. I just decided to make the joke anyway.
It was a good joke. I just didn't know if all of our listeners would be aware of that. So they will both share the nomination. Do you know what I think sort of the interesting side? Let's say they won Best Directing at the Oscars, which I don't think is the buzz that this is going to win the Best Director Oscar, but you never know. If they were to win that, who do you think should give the first speech of the two?
I think Jonathan should just go up and say something really douchey, and then Valerie should get like the punchline.
Oh, that'd be funny to have a little bit worked out. Like, I think it'd be dangerous to not let the woman go first, given the themes of this film, and also just like only one woman before has ever won Best Director at the Oscars. However, there is a strategy involved in. Like, it would be a disastrous move for her to get played off. Right? So you sort of let the guy go first, and then you sort of more chance you'll get both speeches in.
That makes sense. Now, something...
It's a risky game, because if she does get played off, he looks like a bit of a douche for going in front of her.
Now, some people might be familiar with Jonathan Dayton and Valerie Faris because they directed Little Miss Sunshine, which I think is pretty great.
And many people think they got an Oscar snub for that film. That was one of the best picture frontrunners that year. I think people thought it was a close race between it and The Departed, and it didn't get a Best Director nomination, even though everyone knew it would get a Best Picture nomination. It was out in the front then. And a lot of people think maybe it's because directors don't like to nominate directing teams. They like the individual director.
And it was
a comedy.
Yes. And they also directed Ruby Sparks. Did you see that?
I did. I took my friend Liz to go see Ruby Sparks with an advance ticket that I got. So I get advanced tickets to movies directed by these people, I guess. I liked it. It was a nice film, not hugely memorable.
It's good,
not great.
So they've got a hit and a pass so far. So that's sort of the bar for Battle of the Sexes to clear yes. the net to clear, if you will.
Oh, I was going to say, this is the third set left.
vote for the worst pun on facebook.com/screenverdictpodcast.
Yes.
So, obviously, we have Emma Stone and Steve Carell, two big names. We've got to talk a bit on the podcast before. Emma Stone obviously did La La Land.
Oscar win.
Got her the Oscar win. Steve Carell, what's Steve Carell been up
to? She almost won Best Picture too.
The Academy just loves Emma Stone. They can't give her enough gold statues.
Yeah.
What's Steve done recently?
Despicable Me 3. He got an Oscar nomination for Foxcatcher.
Yeah, weird film. Wasn't funny. Not very Steve Carell.
I didn't really like it.
I liked it more than you. I didn't love it, but I still enjoyed it.
You're more into the martial arts and wrestling type sport, maybe.
Yeah, jiu-jitsu is a little bit similar to wrestling, so I was kind of interested just sort of in the topic, really.
I feel like he's done a comedy lately, too, wasn't he? Like some, like, you know, like, big comedy... looking up on IMDb right now to see what he recently did. I love Steve Carell, though. I think Michael Scott in The Office is one of the great TV comedy characters of all time.
Yeah, I think I asked Bonnie the other day if you could have a dinner party, you know, with anybody in the world, you know, past, present, living or dead, who would you have at the dinner table? And Steve Carell was one of her picks.
Nice. I think he'd be a good pick.
He's just likable. People like him. Like, no matter who else you picked, like, he'd probably, they'd mesh.
Yeah.
It's like Paul Rudd. Who doesn't like Paul Rudd? Like, who's turning up to a dinner party? It's like, ugh, Paul Rudd's here. What a drag.
Yeah. He was in, Despicable Me 3. That was, like, his sort of big ones being those Despicable Me things. And he was in The Big Short.
The Big Short? That was, like, 4 years ago.
It's 2015.
Big Short was 2015?
Yeah.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're fans, and interesting sort of roles for... Actually, well, I guess... Okay, so for Emma Stone, not... Her role's more dramatic. I mean, she has light moments, but this is... her character kind of feels more like a leading role. It's more...
Yes.
It's more dramatic, whereas... Carell's Bobby Riggs is more of like a character part,
and he is a bit like Michael Scott.
You know, it's very interesting because a lot of the themes. So the film explores sort of women's stature in society in the 70s, and you know, many ways they're not treated equally. And Bobby Riggs, sort of for personal gain. To get the money and the attention for doing these exhibition matches, kind of takes on this persona of a misogynist caricature. But he is actually quite lighthearted in the film. It's almost portrayed in a forgiving way. It's like, oh, he's like a lovable misogynist. It's like, yeah, he's incredibly sexist, but at least he's funny while he does it. And it's like, he's not really... That doesn't really support those opinions. It's just to promote the event.
Is that worse in a sense, though?
Yeah. Did you think he was an empathetic character? Like, did you think that, you know, in air quotes, misogynism was forgivable, or did you think it was real? Had a real negative impact.
I think I responded to it a bit differently to you, where I, like, thought he was horrible. Like, I thought there were times when there were some funny laughter moments. Like, well, he's practicing in his flippers and raincoat and all that sort of stuff I, like, thought was entertaining. But that was really, like, all the misogynistic things he said, I thought. Like, I thought he was a pretty... villainous character, to be honest. He was sort of fun, but I didn't find any... Like, yeah, it's interesting. I feel like... I'll compare him to Michael Scott on The Office, who was also quite misogynistic at times, especially if you look at his, like, sexual harassment episode, where he runs those seminars and stuff like that. But I feel like with Michael, there was, like, some degree of well-intentioned ignorance. Like, he sort of thinks he's sort of treating women equally, but ends up saying really misogynistic, offensive things because he is, his selfishness or immaturity wins out over his desire. Whereas I feel like the Bobby Knight was just trying to, had some misogynistic views and over-exaggerated them in order to make money and get attention.
I thought this character was much more horrible than Michael Scott, and I don't think he was.
I agree.
I don't think he was empathetic, but just perhaps comparatively to how other characters were played. For example, I'm forgetting his name, but the commentator, like, he was very dry and mean.
Yeah.
Like, oh, rich boys club, women aren't as good as us, they belong in the kitchen. Like, he was just very nasty. And Margaret Court, she seemed very sort of homophobic and pious and judgmental, and she was very unlikable in the film. Whereas even though I wouldn't say... I think it was just maybe his sense of humour. I don't know, because it's interesting. Because it certainly wasn't promoting that and saying it was okay if it's just a joke. But you can see how some people watching him at the time, you know, in real life, would think it's okay.
Mm.
We'd just be like, oh, it's just a joke, love. Like, don't, you know, don't get all hot and bothered about it. Like, even if his intentions weren't as bad, like he was just playing it up for the money, it is sort of still as bad because some people won't take it as a joke.
Yeah, do you think it's, like, what do you think is worse? Someone who actually believes those things or someone who doesn't believe those things but uses the sort of the fact that other people feel those things for their own advantage?
I would say if you're genuinely bad, that's worse. But if you're not genuinely bad, but you just sort of tacitly endorse it or let it happen, that's more disappointing because I had higher expectations for that person.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, that's interesting. Like, part of me thinks it's like they're equally bad. Like, if I had to say what's worse, you know, I think, like, someone goes, oh, there's a lot of people who are scared of a particular group of people or hate a group of people. I'm going to tap into that hate for my own benefit.
I just wonder how the... what the filmmakers were thinking is that... Did they think, is showing his sense of humor going to make him... Will that avoid the film being too one-sided? If it's just, oh, we hate everyone else in the film except for Billie Jean, is that going to be boring? Do we need to kind of make this guy have another dimension, more depth? Because even though I didn't like him as a person, like, some of his lines are just, like, downright funny. Like, he calls him in the middle of the night and he's like, $30,000 for an exhibition game. And she's like, how'd you get my number? He's like, I called every hotel in town.
Yeah, like, that's funny.
That's funny.
Not a particularly misogynistic thing either. That's just a, like, funny character trait.
Yeah.
But when he's sort of saying, making jokes about women, I was like, how is this acceptable? Like,
I guess because it's under the guise of a joke. I don't know, maybe it's just not acceptable, and it never is and never was, but for some reason society, or at least, you know, 55% of society, either just thought it was or let it happen back in the 70s. It was interesting. I want to speak to someone that was around at that time and say, is this exaggerated or is this literally what was going on in the 70s?
Our friend Tom said that that's sort of what was happening.
Yeah, he seemed to think it was pretty bad.
Yeah. And possibly because it was really bad. Like,
I believe it.
It's not like, you know, boy, I cannot believe in a world where women are treated with respect. I see it on the TV weekly. Like, today.
It happens once per week.
I'm trying to be conservative.
Yeah. Interesting.
It's funny the offensive things people can say under the guise of entertainment or sort of showmanship that will just have people flock into stadiums. Just getting caught up in the fervor of hatred under the guise of entertainment.
Yeah, see, I guess that's the thing, right? Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather. You might not be a boxing fan or a mixed martial arts fan, but I bet you heard about these two guys over the last couple of months.
They had a fight, right? They had a boxing...
They had a boxing match, and apparently it broke the pay-per-view record. Most watched boxing match of all time. And part of that is because they're both good trash talkers. They sold the fight. They got people interested. And the way they talk to each other is not really how, you know, you should talk to your kids. your co-workers, the cashier at Woolworths. It's just, it's not really acceptable in like modern society. But people thought this is okay because they're selling a fight. Like, it's not real. And as long as you kind of keep it to personal things, I guess I can understand that concept of it not being real, because it's like, you know, I'm saying mean things about you, but man, like, you're going to make millions more dollars from me doing it because it sells the fight. Yeah. But I guess if you're saying things that go beyond the personal, you know, the other person that has agreed to, like, you know, fight with you, if you make it about their gender or, you know, something else that is like a characteristic, then that's maybe where it gets more iffy, because people can start to believe those things about like a broader base. Like, it has a broader impact than just like insulting that one other person that's agreed to compete against you.
Yeah. Now, I don't know the boxing, wrestling, martial arts. I don't know this world probably as well as you do. Do you ever have these big rivalries where there might be a African-American boxer and a Caucasian white boxer, and the white boxer will come out and go, I'm going to win because African-Americans don't know how to get the job done, or something like that. Because I know they say quite horrible things about each other. Will there ever be a connection to something like a race or something?
That would be supremely bad juju.
That's not just the standard boxing banter.
Yeah, see, that was actually when the Conor and Floyd thing almost went too far, and there was kind of like a worry about a backlash that it would hurt pay-per-view buys, because he referred to Floyd's team, like his kind of like his posse or whatever, the people that was hanging out with him, as like dancing monkeys. And so there's sort of, you know, he kind of claimed that, you know, in Ireland there's maybe not an understanding of sort of like the historical connotation of the word monkeys, and it was just sort of a generic insult. But some people thought, ooh, maybe he was trying to get under his skin with racial stuff. And so, no, that kind of stuff, at least as far as I know, in 2017, that's sort of a no-go.
Because, like, even, and take aside, like, the Inuit, the monkey thing, which was probably a really ill-advised and offensive thing to say. I'm not trying to defend that in any way. But in the, like, the Billie Jean...
It's not the same as saying black people are bad at boxing.
Yeah, it's not just explicitly saying, yeah.
Women can't play tennis.
Yeah, yeah. And he was pretty much saying a man's always better than a woman, and the woman's place is in the kitchen and the bedroom. Yeah. Like, he, like, explicitly said all those things. He crossed the line, Bobby Knight. And you could argue said things that weren't particularly helpful for the way men viewed women in the 70s. Like, may have said things that contributed to a culture of sexism, intimidation of women, and domestic abuse.
So Billie Jean King, she's the hero. She's going up against...
Long story short, I was going for Billie Jean King in the tennis match.
All right, it was the crowd in the cinema was like a 60-40 split.
Yeah.
So we're rooting for Billie Jean, and she kind of decides to start this women's tour. She said, why would we play on the same tour as the men if you're going to pay us, I don't know, whatever it is, you know, 8% of what the men are getting paid. You know, something outrageous, like we get 1,000, they get 12,000, something.
The prize money wasn't as much. The men got, if you won the men's, you know, US Open, you wouldn't get paid as much as the women's single winner.
The other way around. So they're like, we're not playing.
Yes, sorry.
We're doing our own tour. And so on the way, there's kind of that fight. It's kind of interesting seeing them kind of get their own business, getting people to come to see the women-only tournaments, and everyone's like, oh, this will fail, and then seeing that slowly succeed is rather rewarding. And then she develops... So Billie Jean King's actually married, but then she develops a friendship with the hairdresser. I'm forgetting her name. And then they develop a relationship. She's like, but I'm not a lesbian, but maybe. And then I understand that story. Well, I mean, it's a biopic, so obviously, you know, that's what happened. That's a part of Billie Jean King's story. Yeah. And sort of, you know, sexuality issues sort of tied into women's issues at the time. But for me, that was one of the less interesting parts of the story, because it just sort of seemed like a romance. And I understand there are elements to it, but I was like, yeah, we see lots of love stories, but like, I've never seen a movie about a tennis match between a man and a woman. I actually enjoyed the tennis stuff more than the relationship stuff.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, like, it was a bit confusing whether, like, what the purpose of that was. Was that to tie in with the women's issues and being more accepting? Or was it partly to show Billie Jean King as a flawed person because she was struggling with this affair while being a married woman and the impact that was having on her husband? Like, you know, I was struggling to see what the purpose of that part was. Was it to make us sort of like her more or like her less? Or just, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think that's just...
It's what happened.
Yeah, it's just what happened.
It's what happened. And I do think there's a really good line to a husband on the phone towards the end. It was really, boy, that husband was portrayed very well. Like, he was a real trooper with the whole affair thing.
Yeah, he was the most, supportive, cheated on husband ever.
It's like, do you guys need your own room? Should I call, like, when she was getting a bit stressed, like, should I call her? Should we get her to come around? Would that make you feel better? Like, really? Like, some could argue a bit weak. But he didn't really fight for Billie Jean at any point in the movie.
He didn't want to be a distraction.
He didn't want to be distracted. He thought that the tennis was the most important thing. For her. And he was,
Billie Jean's lucky she was good at tennis.
Because
if you're not, like, you know, if she's like an accountant or something, you're like, surely that guy's pissed. He's like, yeah, well, you know, even if I'm totally down with, like, gay and lesbian rights or whatever, like, I'm still pissed because you cheated on me.
Yeah.
Like, I wish I knew you were a lesbian before we got married. But because she's good at tennis and she's playing this big match, which is going to have, you know, potential influence in, like, social discourse and, like, women's rights, he's like, oh, you know, I can't, my feelings are just a drop in the ocean of the world's problems. I'm just going to be the supportive husband. Like,
yeah,
that seems unlikely, but I guess respectable, maybe?
Yeah, I think there's an admirable part, and I'm not saying that's necessarily the way all husbands should react to something like that happening. I'm not saying, like, not trying to say that you can't be upset or angry or hurt or anything. But yeah, like, I think there's something to admire in his response. It's funny, like, when he goes and chases after her, the hairdresser in the hotel, because there's that moment where they get the lift together and she's going to her room, and which she really fumbled the lie. She really should have thought of a better lie. But he helped her out with it a bit. Because she's, like, bringing up the champagne to Billie Jean's hotel room. He's arriving. And he's, like, going, oh, there's some champagne. She goes, oh, yeah, you've got to have fun while you're, like, you know, she's, like, joking about, you know, how she's in love or whatever. Then she, like, gets to the same door. Billie Jean opens the door. She goes, oh, I'm Billie Jean's assistant, just, like, helping with some stuff. He's like going, oh, and I guess that champagne ice is for her leg, right? Like, yes, here you go.
All of his responses are basically, here's what you should have said.
Yeah. Yeah, but anyway, he chases after at one point and says to her, look, and, like, I don't know, if I'm confronting the woman who's just slept with my wife, I might have, maybe not the wisest, but maybe some, like, hey, man, or hey, person. You slept with my wife. Like, that's sort of not cool. Like, but he just goes, just remember that tennis is the most important thing. Whatever you do for Billy, just don't screw up a tennis game.
Guy was just a big fan. Just loved.
Yeah. Loves the game. He loves the game. But anyway, so I think there's a really nice line in from Billie Jean where on the, like, she's on the phone towards the end of the movie and she says something like, he says something like, you're a good woman. And she goes, I wish that were true. Like, so that was sort of, I thought, an interesting line in sort of how the film was approaching that affair.
Yeah, I guess it maybe was just adding another layer, showing you, because, you know, a lot of people that do great things, you know, people that are at the forefronts of important movements and things aren't always perfect people. I mean, no, nobody's perfect. Not everybody has a big sort of scandal or this and that, but, you know, the Martin Luther King film alluded to him having an affair. It's like, you know, I think it was just an attempt to sort of humanize or just, you know, make it seem like a realistic character. We're not just watching, you know, a hero from a fable.
Yeah.
She did these great things, but this you know, her personal life was messy as well.
So, Margaret Court was not portrayed particularly well in this movie. One of the Australian tennis greats, not well represented in this film.
You know, it's interesting. So they develop it a bit of a rivalry. And what I've noticed in jiu-jitsu is after you fight someone, you'll see them again because the tournament sort of community is not that big. Usually the same people come to the different tournaments. And you'll see people again. And once you've fought someone, one of two things tends to happen. You either become good friends, and you see them, and you talk to them at all the tournaments. And you're like, oh, you know, you're competing today. How's it going? How's training? What you been up to? Oh, man, remember that fight we had at the last tournament last year or whatever? Oh, that was a great match. I always remember that match. And, like, you become buddies over it. Like, you kind of bond over it. Or people's demeanor just becomes like, we fought, like, we're rivals. I'm not talking to you. I might fight you again. This time I'm going to win. And it seems like Margaret Court took the approach of, we are rivals, and not only am I taking the negative sort of side, it's also going to make me resent lesbians even more. It's not going to, she doesn't take the approach of like, wow, you know, Billie Jean, look what she's doing, you know. Lesbians are great at tennis. Like, I love lesbians now. Like, I've learned so much about lesbians from tennis. It's like, no, she's my rival. I hate lesbians.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I don't know much to add about Margaret Court. They're just sort of interesting. Like,
but that was in the 70s. Like, surely things have changed by now.
Well, yeah, but yeah. Not really. So, I lead youth group, and one of the youth came up to me one Friday, and I said to me, Margaret Court saying horrible things. It's like, oh no. So, yeah. Should we get to just the last match? Should we get to that?
Yeah, those are the sort of the main rivalries, the plot lines, but it all builds up to Billie Jean King versus Bobby Riggs, who's already beat Margaret Court.
Bobby Riggs, yeah.
He wiped Margaret Court off the court.
Yes.
And now he's taking vitamins as well. So this is like a jacked up. But he hasn't been putting in the work. But
one of our favorites, Fred Armisen, rocks up with his suitcase of vitamins.
It's like,
oh wait, sorry, I took my microphone out. Hello, can you hear me still? Am I still there?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, I unplugged my mic, sorry. Yeah, so we've got Fred Armisen with a briefcase of vitamins.
And he's ready to go. He's pumped. He's confident. He's got a. It's super hot, but he keeps on playing in his like velvet jacket or whatever, because he's got some sort of like commercial logo that he's trying to hawk for ad money.
I love it. Someone says to the game, he's like, you need to take off the jacket. He goes, they're giving us $10,000 or something. He's like, but you know what I thought was interesting with that? They had a very grand entrance to the tennis court, right? Like Billie Jean King being carried on a throne, I guess because her last name is King. Like, part of me thought, far be it for me to tell Billie Jean King what she should have done. If I was there, I would have just walked out there, like, without all the bells and whistles.
Yeah, it seemed like she didn't even really know what was going to happen. Like, she just got, like, picked up and put on there, and she's like, oh, I guess this is happening.
I would have liked the scene where she just went, no, that's not for me. Yeah. I'm just going to walk out, I'm just going to let the tennis do the talking. Not be part of Bobby Knight's, or Bobby Rings, whatever his name is, thing.
Bobby, I think Bobby Knight's a college basketball coach.
Why am I just saying Bobby Knight? I probably used said Bobby Knight as many times as Bobby Riggs in this podcast.
Wait, let me see. We're gonna get to the bottom of this mystery. All right, yeah, Bobby Knight. Yeah, he's the college basketball coach that was known for going crazy. Like, one time he threw a chair onto the court because he was angry with some referee's call. Like, he's the guy that, like, goes nuts at his players and stuff. Anyway, that's what
he was. And I think he endorsed Donald Trump, right? Like, is that where I've heard about him in the last year?
You know, that's not coming up. It's not coming up on the first page of Google, and to be honest, I can't really be bothered to click anything. But
there's a thing. I think the thing where like Donald Trump's like Bobby Knight, MLS Bobby Knight, get him to come up here. You do a bit of my speech, or something like that. I think there's some.
Yeah. Well, at least my chair recollection was true. One of the first page of Google. Bobby Knight throws a chair. In brackets, high quality. Because don't you hate it when you watch these 80s sports clips and they're not in high quality?
Yeah.
anyway. Yeah. So, yeah, Bobby Riggs. So,
we have the tennis match. It's a really well-shot tennis match.
Yeah, I liked it because it sort of had that... perpendicular... to the baseline. Anyway, it looked like you were watching a real match. You know, they used like the ESPN angle. So, and he had like the commentary and stuff. And I was getting into it. It was they played all the best points. Like I was getting the highlights. It's like getting the highlights, but you still don't know who's going to win.
I'm not sure if you saw me in the cinema doing a few fist pumps at various crucial points.
The Leighton Hewitt. Come on.
Yeah, I was like, yes. I got really into it. And I was, after the whole movie lead-up and some of those horrible things Bobby Riggs was saying, I was thinking, okay, she's got to not just win, but win by a lot. Like, she's got to just, like, not... It needs to be the worst possible win for Bobby as possible. I was so like, when he started to come back a bit in the second set, like, and I'm being generous there, like... I was like, oh, come on. Like, you know, I was like, oh, no, don't let him win a set. Don't let him get towards a tie break. We want a clean win here, an unquestionable win.
Yeah, I wanted a close win. One, because it's more dramatic, it's more entertaining. And two, because that dang commentator guy that was so nasty said he knew that Bobby Riggs was going to win because Billie Jean King was going to fold under the bright lights. That she was going to break under pressure. So I wanted it to come down, you know, right to that final set, that last point, and she just, you know, she toughs it out. She, like, did comes she, through when it matters most to show that women don't fold under pressure.
So, yeah, she went to the crucible moment.
But she...
I like it.
It was, it's, well, they kind of show Bobby winning a few points just to, you know, for film purposes. I mean, the sets were close. Like, he won a few games, but she ended up winning in straight sets. She won three sets.
Yeah, it was like, well,
so you got your comprehensive victory.
6-4. Yeah, which I was pretty pleased about. But now with what you said, I sort of don't mind the idea of her winning in a close one to show she doesn't fall under pressure.
Should have do in the reboot, in the 2042 reboot, just mate, turn it into a five-setter. But yeah, she wins. It's a big victory for women and a big loss for vitamins.
Yeah. Fred Armisen is going to some other town to do a Hawkins vitamins.
Yeah. This is that's the you know, like TV, I feel like TV was really bad for the snake oil salesman. Because in the old days, like, you just rolled into town, you're like, buy some snake oil. It, like, cures all your ailments. And then it doesn't, and you just take your money and you go on to the next town. But, like, when you're hawking vitamins on TV and Bobby Riggs gets beaten by Billie Jean King, it's like, where do you take your vitamins?
Mm.
Like, overseas market, maybe. But that's, yeah, it's a tough life.
Would you perhaps maybe argue that TV's been really bad for the snake oil salesman, but good for the snake oil politician?
What's a snake oil politician?
There's a thing, just like, tells you, like, they're able to get more play. Like, so, like, let's say, like, just for instance, if you're running for president, you could come out and say, oh, I'm going to do all these things and it's going to be so easy and all the things you're worried about are going to go away. And you just need to vote for me and get rid of those crooks on the other side of things. And then everyone's like, oh, yeah, sounds pretty good. Let's go vote for that guy.
Yeah, I think it definitely helped a transition from a matter of substance to style being a replacement for substance.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. So not referencing any specific politicians, but
I was trying to think of just like a really obscure politician just being like, yeah, looking at you, Rogue Khanna. Like,
yeah.
I don't know, just like some random person, like,
yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, not good for the vitamins.
Congressman, like, Jeff Wears for Connecticut Sports, like. yeah, anyway.
Wait, is there any sort of denouement? What happens after the win? And I think they just wrap it up.
Yeah, let's wrap it up. She won the game. A lot of text comes up on screen to say what happened to the various people, I think, like these biopics usually do.
You don't like reading. Like, you refuse to read any of the Dexter books, any of the Game of Thrones books. Do you read the text in movies?
Yeah. I read the text in movies at the end.
I came here to watch a movie, not read a book. Like,
yeah, look.
Get wet. Someone call Morgan Freeman. Can he narrate the final scrolling text? Because I'm not reading this nonsense.
Yeah, look, here's my thought on the text that comes up at the end of biopics or movies based on a true story. I think sometimes it's really effective, but like probably like 7 out of 10 times, it's just a really lazy way of just providing exposition. Like we want people to know what happens. Let's just like put up a couple paragraphs of writing. So I'm not always against it. I think this film did an okay job. I don't think it probably was a little unnecessary or whatever. But I do think I'm not against it in principle, but I think it's used way too much.
I think it's just sometimes I think it, you know, just replaces filmmakers being able to come up with a satisfying way to conclude the film. They just go, and then this happened, and it's just easy. But
if we ever make a biopic or a movie based on a true story, John. We're co-directors, right? Can we, like, just have at the end, when the movie ends, whenever that ends, like, something just come up on the screen going, like, more stuff happened, look it up. Like, everyone's got their phones on them in the audience. Like,
just
if they want to know, like, if Billie Jean won the next, you know, Wimbledon, they can, like, search that.
Just say, you know, at this point, the budget ran out. Google the rest.
Yeah. A lot of stuff. So, yeah, maybe the only stuff we ever see, one that we put up in paragraphs and stuff, that, like, maybe we'll look up a bit of the stuff that happens, and if there's anything that's particularly hard to find, maybe we can put that at the end of the movie. We know it's like, oh, that's pretty tricky information, like, to research. Or maybe we just set up on the film website more information on
just trying to get, like, reroute it back to, like, something that's going to get us ad revenue.
What?
For the stunning conclusion, like us on Instagram.
Go to HillaryClinton.com for more information. Okay. I have one slight gripe about sort of the movie and, like, the progress for women in how that's depicted in the movie, right?
What was that?
I'm interested in your thoughts on this. So, Billie Jean King won the tennis match. It was a victory for women. Bobby Riggs was that, like, a great ending, really good move. But a lot of the movie leading up to it shows Billie Jean really put her head in and did a lot of training. Like, she was on the court, she was practicing, dedicated. When we see Bobby Riggs is faffing around, he's playing up with the press, he's at the pool with babes, he's just relying on the, like, dodgy snake oil vitamins, he's sort of, like, more of a spectacle, he's not really focusing. Like, is the message of the movie at all that, like, the only reason a woman was able to beat a man is because he didn't take it seriously?
I definitely don't think that's the point.
But is that a message of the film?
Is that something that someone could take away? Yeah, if you wanted to make excuses for why he lost. I mean, the match wasn't close.
No.
You know, can he blame the jacket on the loss on the jacket? No. I don't think the vitamins weren't help. I don't think the vitamins hindered him. I just don't think they helped. Him goofing around, him not training as hard as he could have, that definitely had an effect. Here's the thing. Whether Bobby Riggs or Billie Jean King is better at tennis isn't the point.
Yes, that's a thing probably worth saying.
Because, you know, that's just one example, and that's just, you know, anecdotal. The point was that many men thought it was a joke, and that there's no way any woman could beat any man, regardless if they're in my prime or in their prime, or if I'm, you know, 50 years old and I'm drinking beers and smoking cigars. You know, you're just not only are you not as good, like, you're just not even on the level. Like, you don't even deserve our respect. And so that's why it's important that Billie Jean King won. You know, she might have played, whoever was the number one male tennis player at the time, I don't know, Rod Laver or someone, he might have been from a different generation, and lost. And it wouldn't, that the point isn't whether, like, men or women are better. It's just that the point was they are highly skilled athletes that bring a crowd, and they deserve respect, and they deserve more than 8% of the winnings or whatever they were getting paid. So,
yeah. does know whether they're better or worse, they deserve equal respect.
Yes. My thing is that sport is a business. And so whether or not...
here we go, Mr. Free Market Jonathan here. Continue.
Whether or not, you know, women or men are better at tennis isn't the point.
Yes.
You know, or any sport. It's like, you know, men and women doing track and field. You know, if it doesn't matter if the man runs 9 seconds and the woman runs 10 seconds. Like, if they both sell out the stadium and the same amount of people turn up and the same amount of people tune in to watch, it's like, you deserve as much respect and you deserve to be paid the same amount. Whereas if people aren't as interested, let's say the NBA basketball and the WNBA women's basketball, if one of them gets 10 million views per game and one of them gets 100,000 views per game, you can understand why the men get paid more. And you could say, hey, stop being so dismissive of women's basketball, maybe put more money into promoting the women's basketball, and you can try and even that gap. But when the gap is that big, you know, you can't say everything should be 50-50 because one's bringing in literally 1,000 times as much money. But women's tennis is popular. People love watching women's tennis, like, you know, Serena Williams, like Sharapova, like lots of great matches. And so when, like, a sport is, you know, is putting on that level of entertainment, that's when it deserves the respect, whether you're a man or a woman.
I think there was a really good point made, similar to one you just made at the beginning of the film, where the guy's going, look, people are coming for the men's tennis, not the women's tennis. And Billie Jean King or her friend says to him, oh, sorry, is the women's game not a sellout? is the women's final? Is that, no, that's a sellout too, you idiots. I paraphrase that exchange. Yeah, so, okay, I think there were some good points in there. I do agree. And ultimately, even if Billie Jean King had lost the game against Bobby Riggs, it would not have justified any of the comments he made about women's place being in the kitchen or the bedroom and all those sorts of things.
No, not at all.
But
it must have felt like that for Billie Jean.
Yeah. Well, sorry. Oh, yeah. No, I see why it was so important she sort of had to win. But it wouldn't have made Bobby Riggs right if she had lost.
Yeah, like, I mean, if I watched the film and it turned out Bobby Riggs had won, would I have been like, oh man, I spent all this time respecting women, but they couldn't even beat Bobby Riggs in a tennis match.
Yeah.
It's like, Bonnie, I'm on my way home. Make sure dinner's ready.
Yeah. Like, don't leave the kitchen or the bedroom.
It's like, hey babe, just watch this film. Turns out you're a piece of shit.
Yeah. Oh boy.
Don't think that was the point.
No.
So I think we've got to the bottom of it. Is it time to give it a verdict?
Yeah, we've got to, because I've got to leave in about 5 minutes. So ten minutes. So let's do it.
Battle of the Sexes.
Oh, do you want me to start? Sorry,
I paused too long.
Yeah.
Sure. No, I'll go. Battle of the Sexes. You know, I like the story. It's a good sort of underdog story. I like sports. I like tennis. I played a bit of tennis myself. Played around 4 years of tennis in high school. I was moderately good. And I was impressed, actually, with the tennis. I don't know how much of that was stunt doubles versus Emma Stone and Steve Carell actually playing, but they sold me on it. They obviously learned how to play tennis somewhat, so that was good. So I bought into the story. I liked the characters. I thought some of the relationship stuff, the girlfriend and the husband thing, kind of dragged a little. And the fact that the film is kind of billed as Battle of the Sexes, and you see all the promos and the posters and stuff with Emma Stone and Steve Carell, I think it takes a little too long to get to their rivalry and their match, because you know that's what it's about, and that and everything else just kind of feels like padding. But at the same time, you sort of need to build up to the match. You can't just play the match. But I did think, you know, the press conferences with the verbal jabs back and forth, you know, that was good. Him wheeling and dealing, you know, making the midnight calls, you know, off raising the stakes in order to get the match set up. Like, that was the stuff for me that had the best pacing, the most momentum. And overall, yeah, it was very satisfying to see her eventually win. So I think they nailed her, not redemption, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but just sort of the success. That victory was sweet. But beyond that, there wasn't really too many memorable scenes or lines of dialogue or anything that made me, like, really make, like, a deep connection. Like, oh, I'm going to remember this come, you know, February, when I'm posting my opinions online about the Oscars. So I enjoyed it, but probably not going to be one of my very favorites of the year. I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I really like this film. I thought Emma Stone and Steve Carell were both really good in it. There's sort of maybe two performances when I'm thinking of my best sort of the year at the end of court, depending on how the year goes, be in the mix. So great performances, really good, like, issues that are addressed, like, the sort of those interesting look back at the 70s as to sort of how women were viewed, but also, like, a good seeing how much progress we've made since then, but also maybe areas where we haven't made progress. So I actually thought there's some pretty good themes touched on well in that film, in the film. I like the last 10 especially, really exciting, so well shot. I like the sort of ragtag group of girls, like, taking on the system as well. That was fun. I agree, the relationship-y stuff with the hairdresser dragged and wasn't particularly what I was interested in. And the movie was quite long for the story it was telling as well. So I'm going to give it a 7.5 out of 10.
There you go. Well, not bad, not a bad effort.
No.
Hopefully you enjoyed the podcast even more than the film. Although...
As always.
Let us know. Go to facebook.com/screenverdictpodcast. Give us a rating.
Do you want to set up a poll of, like, what do you prefer, Battle of the Sexes or the Screen Verdict Battle of the Sexes review?
You know, that's an interesting one, because there are some movies that we are definitely better than, and then there are some movies which we're probably not as good as. But, like, Battle of the Sexes, that's sort of like a good barometer. Like, it's a good place to aim.
I think also we joked about it at the beginning a bit. But, like, obviously, we touched in this podcast on a lot of women's issues and things like that, and we are two guys. So if you are a woman out there and we have said something offensive insights or a perspective, please send us your thoughts and comments.
Yes, we're willing to listen to where we went wrong and then read that out on the internet.
Yeah.
I think we did pretty good, but we'll let Facebook be the judge of that.
You never, like, we're not women. We don't walk in their shoes, and maybe there's some perspective. It might even be that we said something horrible, but maybe we failed to notice an important, you know, perspective or insight.
Yeah, or maybe we just referred to the characters as the wrong name for half the podcast.
But that's the male character, so it's okay.
Yeah. very good. Yeah. Well, thanks a lot for joining, guys. There's like 2 minutes left in the Panthers game, so I'm going to try and watch that.
What's the score? What's the score at the moment?
We're down. We're down by five, but if we can get the ball back, we can win.
Yeah, you can come back from five in 2 minutes. Okay, very good. Okay.
All right.
See you guys.
Thanks for listening, guys. Catch you next week.